episode for 2019. I'm not going to count that. It's called Draft Stuff that we did before. I am Jeff Manns. Find my work over at fantasyguru.com, elitefantasy.com, and elitesportsbetting.com. At Jeff_Manns on Twitter, the Jeff Manns, all one word, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, all that good stuff. With me today, it's a fantasy executive, y'all, Corey Parson in the house. What's up, Corey?
What's going on, Jeff? It is always a good time to be talking to you, but especially now as we head into the holiday. You know what that means. When the holiday is over and we get back, everybody's going to turn their attention to fantasy football. So we must be ready because we got to get everybody else ready.
Hell yeah, man. And we're going to get everybody ready for that. Again, Corey, it's been – so I don't know if you and I have ever had this kind of like – hosting together free reign type of thing. It's been, and if we have, it's been a while, man.
And if we were doing it at any other point, it was, you probably got a phone call the next morning saying don't talk to Corey anymore, he's too good. No, don't talk to Corey anymore. So I guess this is the first time we can do this openly and freely without being chastised.
Hell yeah, man. So this is going to be a lot of fun. Obviously, we're happy to have Corey with us at fantasyguru.com and the Elite Sports Network, Elite Fantasy, Elite Sports Betting this year. Been a long time coming. I've known Corey for a long time. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll get into our draft guide that is available over at fantasyguru.com. If you guys like those discounts and all that crap, elitefantasy.com/radio gets you 25% off anything that we're offering right now. So, there you go. We'll talk about players we're high and low on. Just get a general feeling as we enter 2019 here for everybody. And Corey, so you mentioned like after the 4th of July holiday, everybody's going to be gung-ho and turn their attention to fantasy football mode. Do you ever get out of fantasy football mode? How much baseball, if any, do you play?
Oh, I stopped playing baseball a couple years ago. Obviously, the past couple of years, this becoming more and more of a business. You know, like if you're grinding it and killing it like you've been doing in the DFS space for the past couple of years, yeah, you're into baseball. You know what I mean? Yeah. But for somebody on the season-long side mainly, it's like there's no money to be made in baseball, in my opinion. So kind of put that on the back burner. You know, I might do a little DFS. I might lay it down a little bit on some totals and stuff like that now that we are, you know, in that space so close to me in New Jersey. But, nah, I'll be honest with you, I think I may have seen 3 or 4 innings of baseball this year.
Nice. All right. Well, that's fair enough because we're going to be talking all football anyway. And you know, I feel like the NFL draft, you and I did some shows with Russell Clay and the crew here at Fantasy Guru. But, like, you know, since that moment, that was sort of the beginning, I feel like I'm ready to go. Like, I know it's not even July. We're recording this before the holiday, as a matter of fact, me and Corey. But, man, I don't know about you, CP, but I'm, like, ready to go. If the season started – this Sunday, I'd be like, hey, let's get it on. I'm ready to go right now.
I agree. I can go hot now. I can go live right now. I think I've done, since the draft, I've done maybe about 3 or 4 best balls just to get a better feel of the board, see where some of the rookies are going and stuff like that, see how some of these controversies are playing out, some of these big questions that people are going to be asking about. But I think since that time, the thing that I've noticed the most, and maybe you've seen this too, Jeff, is we had, around draft time, we had a consensus that Saquon Barkley was the first pick. Yeah. I'm starting to see more and more Alvin Kamara at 1-1. And I'm like, you know what? This ain't a bad idea.
Yeah. It's wild that I thought Barkley was going to be the consensus as well. And things, you know, people get creative. I don't have any problem. It really, I have 4 guys at the top, CP, where it's fine. If you prefer one over the other, you know, I can kind of get it. And Kamara obviously is absolutely one of them. No Mark Ingram here this year. You know, I'm an offensive lines guy, so losing the center Max Unger this past offseason, even though they replenished it in the draft, I'm okay with it. I like Kamara a great deal, and I think, you know, if you're looking for just that sort of, again, third guy that could be the number one guy, he absolutely is that. I have no problem with Kamara. Are you starting to say you're trending that way as well?
I would probably give it a – see, this is my thing with Barkley, and I pose this question to you because I don't know how I feel about it right now. Let's just say Daniel Jones does become the starter. You got to figure that's going to hurt Barkley because we know Eli can't get the ball but nobody to him. Maybe Daniel Jones can throw interceptions further down the field. Or maybe it's just a completely, you know, 12 in the box now and they bottle Barkley up. I worry about what happens if Jones gets that job. If he replaces Eli, what does that do for Barkley?
I think it's a fair argument to make because, quite frankly, and I know you're in the New York City area, and we're going to talk a little bit about that too. So, like, everyone's down and hates on the Giants, and I get it, but I Eli Manning is a perfect example. He's not good. He's not great. He's not good. But he's not awful either. Like, he's not just atrocious. And people are like, well, he can't throw the deep ball. Absolutely. But you know who else can't? Like, Tom Brady can't. Like, there's a couple quarterbacks in the league that can't throw the deep ball anymore for whatever reason. And Eli's in that. You look at his numbers from a year ago, it's not the worst ever. And the thing I said about Peyton Manning back when he won that Super Bowl and, you know, came in for Brock Osweiler and all that stuff, they still have to respect him. And I think your point is valid where with Eli on the field, the safeties have to – they have to pay attention that Eli, if you keep inching up, you start putting 10, 11 in the box. All of a sudden, he's going to make you pay. I mean, they still have Golden Tate, Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, who could stretch the field. So Eli will recognize that and opt out of whatever play call, you know, run to Saquon Barkley. So I think you're right. Whereas Daniel Jones being a rookie probably won't recognize as quickly. And he won't be able to get out of that play. Probably won't have the autonomy to do it as well. So I think there is something to that as negative as we are on Eli Manning, I think he is much more positive for Saquon Barkley. But I don't know, man. Do you think they seem to be in love with Eli Manning?
No, they are. They have a love affair with Eli Manning. It's very weird. It's quite awkward. You want to turn away and not watch it. Man, sports in New York has just gotten terrible. The Knicks are shit show. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I saw a great tweet. So it's people out there whose teams are the Knicks, the Mets, and the Jets. Can you imagine living that life right there? Man, the city.
That's it.
That's it. I went to a game last year, and they got beat down by the Eagles on a Thursday night. Mm-hmm. In the parking lot, it was like mutiny. It was just straight up, we hate Eli Manning. We can't stand him. Got to get him out of here. The fan base has flipped on him, but Eli still has the good graces of the ownership, which is awkward. But the fan base, I mean, you got enough bad Eli performances and you ran Odell out of town. It's going to get real ugly out there some of these Sundays this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Beckham. And he's our cover boy in the draft guide this year because he's such a polarizing figure. I mean, Beckham is an enigma himself. Like, that dude needs to ball out with Cleveland to show it. Because if he does something stupid, if he gets himself in trouble, suspended, on a boat, any of that kind of stuff, they're going to look positively on this Giants move, Corey. So I think it's really – like, Odell Beckham has put himself in a make-or-break type of scenario here in Cleveland year one. Don't you think?
I don't want to say he's in a tough spot because his talent, and now he's got a quarterback that's going to get him the ball and the fan base is going to embrace him. Much like I think they did here, the Giants are just an old school organization. Yeah. And they're not going to have a player that outshines the brand. And they knew that the Giants could not keep up with that talent. So I think that's a big reason why they let him go. As opposed to having him criticize Eli Manning every other Sunday and answer that question. So they did away with essentially the best player in the history, the best offensive player in New York Giant franchise history. Odell Beckham. He really is.
Lawrence Taylor just jumped in your mind. And you're like, oh, okay, the
offensive player. Yeah, offensive player. You know, he does a better job than, you know, Amani Toomer or Stephen Baker, the touchdown maker. You know, he's better than those guys. But they loved it, Mark Bavaro, though. But now what I will say is this. I got him as the first wide receiver off the board at about the fifth pick. I just look at the offense. The attention he's going to command. You're talking about a guy that's got Hall of Fame talent. I love D-Hop. I love Devontae Adams. I'm going Julio. I'm going Odell at five as the first wide receiver off the board.
Wow. See, here's the thing. And with the first round, and we'll circle back to the first overall pick, I love the idea of going receiver, honestly, in me, because I think there's a lot of value in the third and fourth round at running back, which we haven't seen in recent years. But the problem I have with a couple of these guys, and Beckham and Brown are pretty much the polarizing figures there, is there's that question mark. I love what could happen, but in the first and second round, Corey, I want to know what happens. Uh-huh. I don't want to be the smartest guy in the room in the first and second round. I want to be Giants ownership in the first and second round. I want to be the Cleveland Browns in round 6 through 12. You know what I mean? I want to start making my moves there, identifying those breakout players. And Beckham, new spot. He didn't show up to mini camps, organized team activities and the non-mandatory stuff. Baker, second year quarterback.
I can't believe you take that as a big deal. That
it's not a big deal.
For OTAs and mini camps. It's like he's out there in California on a beach working out, doing what Odell Beckham does. I trust that he comes in there ready to rock and roll.
But he does not have a good track record, like, of playing games the last 2 years. You know, he's a guy who's been out, and I know injuries are part of that, but whatever he's doing, whether he's on a boat or in the sun or whatever. And again, I'm not anti-Odell Beckham. Put him on the cover, obviously. Yeah. So I'm in. It's just like Hopkins, Adams, Thomas, and Jones, my top four at wideout. I can't find any kinks in the armor there. I'd have got nothing with either one of those, any one of those four, you know, to say, all right, well, it's worth taking a chance on Beckham. Beckham could outperform him, obviously, and I wouldn't even doubt it at all. But I don't think any one of those four come with the same amount of risk.
No, I understand what you're saying on that. I can definitely dig that. With the talent level of Odell, I would put ahead of those guys. But when you look at Hopkins and Adams, and especially particularly Michael Thomas, who's been so consistent in working with Drew Brees, and he's probably got a big contract coming his direction also, those guys are a little bit safer. I just can't – for me, myself personally, is Odell, I'll take the big seal and I'll take the big upside on the motivated player. Listen, I think the thing – you remember a couple summers ago, it was, you know, the high ankle sprain. He act like Ray Lewis. Look at me. I'm hurt. Taking his helmet off and kneeling on the turf and this, that, and the third. But then he was like going to go to Germany to get his blood spun like Kobe Bryant and come back and try to play. When he was out there, he did well. Then he broke the ankle trying to be out there with those dudes. Last year, the thing with the quad, yeah, he probably shut it down last year. He probably was like, you know what? This guy can't get the ball to me. I'm good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that very possible. And there's a reason, you know, why as bad and dumb as the Giants organization is and are with John Mara and then Gettleman, who came over from Carolina, they're not wise and they're not aggressive people, but you're not going to just let Odell Beckham Jr. walk either unless there's something you just don't quite trust. And hopefully, and he absolutely could be the top performer. He could be the most polarizing NFL player in the league because he does have that kind of talent. It's just about, you know, top of your fantasy draft, whether or not you want to sell out for upside that early on in the process. I don't mind it at all. I do like him. What do you think about Antonio Brown, though? Sort of a similar – I was going to ask you the question, Beckham versus Brown. You've obviously answered that question, but what about AB? You know, because I've had two different, very different thoughts on Antonio Brown. I want to get your thoughts on.
Oh, Jeff, we've come full circle. We're talking about Antonio Brown. It's how it all started. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe it started. Tell that story first, because we got to dive into me and Corey's relationship, sometimes tumultuous relationship from back in the day. But tell that story about Antonio Brown.
It was the dog days of summer, producing the morning show, the Great Roto Experts in the Morning, with the homies, the King, Scott Engel, and Adam Ronis. And it was the dog days of summer. And I'm like, man, we got to do something to get this spiced up. You know what I'm saying? So I believe you guys, the evening before or something like that, had did a mock draft on you guys' show. And maybe Antonio Brown might have been the third round pick. And I was very high on Brown. And my talking point was that even though Brown was going in the second, he was worthy of a first round pick. And when I saw, you know, I saw the draft, the mock draft results, then I went upstairs and listened to the audio, which you wasn't trashing Brown, but you didn't have him as high as I like it. And I was like, nobody else on here is going to engage me and start a fight with me. But I guarantee you, Jeff Manns will. We can get this thing spiced up. And sure enough, we went off about a good 10 days or so, but it was some of the I'd say some of the greatest radio in the history of Sirius XM Fantasy.
Every day waking up and it's like, dude, the morning show is trashing you, bro. Because I used to do like the 12 to 2. And then, you know, we'd always hang out afterwards. So I'm getting up at 4 or 5 o'clock. And I'm waking up like 6, 7 o'clock with Corey, Scotty Engel, and Ronis going in on me. And it's a lot of fun. And, man, Brown specifically, that's a guy I was – entirely wrong again on. You know, remember, people forget, he was a sixth-round pick, Central Michigan University. He's just a nothing guy, kind of. You know, comes in, and I was team Mike Wallace. Mm-hmm. I was team Mike Wallace. I'm like, Mike Wallace, dude, he's never going to be able to do what Mike Wallace does here. You know, never going to have. And, you know, that's Roethlisberger's guy. I can't – and then they give Antonio Brown the contract. And then, you know, you and some of those guys were talking him up. And I'm like, nah, come on. I'm not an undersized wide receiver guy anyway. Anytime you look at a guy under 6 foot, I always kind of put him in the maybe pile. That's just what I've done throughout. And sometimes it hurts me, like in the Brown case, T.Y. Hilton, you know, I've been burned by. But realistically, it's also saved me from Philip Dorsett's and –
yeah, that's true too.
All these kind of guys. So there, it's a, you know, it's just a way I have. But yeah, those are fun times, man. We battled, and you absolutely were right on Antonio Brown, because like 2 years later, I was putting him on the cover of my magazine, drafting him first overall in industry drafts.
No doubt. Nah, he really did come through real big. I remember that first game he scored 2 touchdowns, and my Twitter blew up. And I had him everywhere that year. I had a big year. I had a lot of winnings that year. As far as this year goes, though, I think he's going in the right spot at somewhere in that second round as a wide receiver too. Man, you know, I got love for AB, so maybe I'm biased. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to get a lot of targets, and I think that's going to be his main thing. You look at Oakland playing from behind. I think he's going to be, you know, at peace enough not being in Pittsburgh with Roethlisberger to not get animated and pissed off with Derek Carr when right. he overthrows him on a couple straight back-to-back possessions or something like that. Now, a couple of weeks ago, this is going to blow your mind, Jeff.
Uh-oh.
Because it's so many different people in the fantasy industry and so many different, you know, trains of thoughts and stuff like that. And we'll get into a lot of them as we move along throughout the next, you know, throughout the program. But I was with Michael Salfino maybe about 2 weeks ago. We was having a couple of drinks, me, Michael Salfino, and Nando. And we got to talking about Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
And Salfino was like, he would have him as one of his top wide receivers. And he was like, well, look at John Gruden's track record with 30-plus-year-old wide receivers. And I'm like, wow, you really broke that shit all the way down. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And listen, I'm not basing it off of that. What I'm basing it off is the amount of targets. And what he did say is, as a number one wide receiver, that he will get a ton of targets, maybe up to 150, 165 targets.
Yeah, and John Gruden, his offenses are sneaky, and they love to throw the ball. They're very pass happy. I'll say this, like, I wasn't that big of a fan of Gruden coming back. I wasn't a fan of Gruden, the commentator. I wasn't a fan of Gruden. You know, the coach was good. He's fiery. He was young, but, you know, 55 years old now. What does he have? I'll tell you, though, that team fought down the stretch for him. That team was a pile of dog shit. And what happened is they took the Chiefs to the end. They beat the Steelers down the stretch. They were playing at the end of the year where a lot of other teams were giving up on their coaches. So whatever he's doing seems right. This Raiders offense, not nearly as bad. You mentioned defense, absolutely atrocious, which should help them have them throw. Here's what happened with me with Antonio Brown. He just went bananas. Like, I don't know what bothered me the most about Antonio Brown's offseason. I think it was the dyed blonde mustache. Like, that just looked like he'd been drinking bleach. Yeah. Like,
that
what
didn't do it for me,
you doing, bro? Like, I don't understand anything. He just was bananas. He didn't need to go bananas. He can get out of there without having to do it. And then, so I'm like, all right, this guy's out of his mind. You know, screw him. I'm out on Antonio Brown. And then I watched mini camp, and I'm watching this dude. And you forget when you go through an offseason how unbelievably fluid the guy is. And we, you know, you and I did NFL draft shows with Russell Clay and stuff. So I'm looking at DK Metcalf, and I'm looking at these guys, you know, run routes, and everything clunky and stops and starts and everything. And then you see Antonio Brown, and just everything's fluid and just seamless and easy. And it's like, oh my God, he's so freaking good. It's like, it was like painful to watch the minicamp, because I'm, oh, he's so freaking good. Oh.
Now, he's a workout warrior. And, you know, as far as the personality quirks, that's that Dade County in him. But, no, he's a workout warrior. He's an elite route runner. He's our generation's Jerry Rice. I think he's that good of a talent. And I think he's going to make Derek Carr better. As far as his offseason, though, I'm not a Ben Roethlisberger guy. So, you know,
I'm not either.
Yeah.
lot to get me to even fake. I hate Ben Roethlisberger probably more than anybody on the planet. And even I had to say, all right, you've gone too far in Big Ben. When I have to say that, that's bad. That's real bad, because this dude is One
and
of
then the he legit- flipped on Juju. And Juju's like a 20-something-year-old video game player. You know what I'm saying? Trying to get his first big check. Juju don't got no beef with anybody, Jeff.
Juju's like the greatest kid in the world. Yeah. Like he's riding his bike, playing video games, just hanging out, you know. And then, yeah, he attacks Juju. Like,
that was too much for me.
That was pretty wild for sure. But, man, good Lord. And AB is great. He's just so, so fluid in his routes. And he's going to make Derek Carr better. He's going to make this team better. Raiders offense, Josh Jacobs. They bring in the right tackle, Trent Taylor from Trent Brown, I'm sorry, from the Patriots. Antonio Brown, I mean, that's going to open up running lanes and everything else. What are your thoughts on this Raiders team from an offensive standpoint, at least?
I think they'll be better. I think they'll be interesting. I think it's going to be tough to find the spots to play people outside of Antonio Brown's and Jacobs. I think Jacobs is an interesting talent. Listen, one of these rookie running backs are going to finish inside the top 12. Right now, I just can't figure out. I can't figure out which one it is. But the industry seems to think that it's going to be the Josh Jacobs kids because of his running style and what they'll be able to do with him. And obviously, AB helping that offense flow a little bit better. Jalen Richard's a late-round guy, especially if you're in the best ball PPR. You'll notice he'll be in your lineup a lot. At one point last season, I think he was getting like 29% of the targets in the offense, which was unbelievable when he was sitting on waiver wires. So they got pieces. I just worry about when you start putting guys outside of Brown in your lineup, the consistency of the production.
Yeah, I could see that as well. Rookie run, you don't know. Obviously, take a first-round stab on a running back, you've kind of painted yourself in the corner as far as usage is concerned. I think that seems to be what the industry is going on. But, yeah, Josh Jacobs, the FSGA drafts, I think he went in the second round. Yeah, end of the second round in both, which is a little aggressive.
People are never ready for that draft. Never.
Corey.
They're never ready for that draft. That draft is always – I look at this and I'm like, what is this?
Did you see both drafts or no? There's two drafts this year.
No, I only saw – I saw the big one. I saw the A draft. I didn't see the B draft.
Corey, this B draft – and I mean, listen, you know, I respect people. I really do. I mean, I could disagree with somebody's work and still respect it. And you and I have always done that, even when we're battling about Brown and all these things. That you want to talk about not being ready. That draft was horrendous. I mean, horrendous. I'm hearing guys like, I'm going to take Tampa Bay wide receiver DeSean Jackson. It's like, oh, my God, he's on the Eagles. Oh, my God. It's like, oh, it was just – there's so – kickers and stuff going in the eighth round. I couldn't believe it. Like, I was
– Ronis was in that league too, right? So now Ronis get a free win. You know what I'm saying?
Ronis told me afterwards. I'm not going to say what he told me. He's like, dude, I was just – he couldn't believe it either. He was as surprised as anybody. He's just like, okay, give me the second pick in this one. All right. I was happy I hosted the first one. That's for sure, because Kyle L. Frank and everybody. Hanson came over. Hanson, we did like a switcheroo on that broadcast. He came over and set it on there. He goes, these people, our draft here is more mentally focused than the other one. We had a draft and they showed over there because I don't know. And like you said, it's hard. You know, a lot of those guys you look at, they're doing free agency moves in fantasy baseball, and they're grinding, and their mind obviously just wasn't on, you know, the NFL or fantasy football. They're just doing it and hoping, you know, they'll figure it out in August when it's time for that. But let's go back a little bit. We're talking about SiriusXM a little bit, and Corey was, I believe, the first producer I ever had, like on a weekend show. You know, it was way back, going back to 2010 or something. I think you were the first one. If not, I know you produced some of our early shows right there before you became a big-time superstar morning show producer and all that stuff. So you were doing that. What was it like in the early days at the station and, like, when you were working nights and weekends at first?
Oh, God. Let me tell you something, Jeff. I got it out the mud. Let me tell you that.
Yeah, you did quick, too, man.
Yeah, we had to get it done. It was a cool, it was a new idea, it was innovative. You know, fantasy football was my life at the time, you know what I mean? And we were getting ready to go into that season. So, you know, we started it off with a different mix and stuff at first. And then I think like around the time when you guys came in and that first Tout Wars happened and we really started to get rolling and stuff like that. I remember thinking that, you know, you guys were going to do a good job. I was coming in on Friday evenings at 6 and I was going home Sunday evenings at 6. I'm talking about sleeping on studio floors and doing shows between the Fantasy Channel and the College Channel for like a good 48 hours just to get the hours. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But you know, you build a love for it and stuff like that. But now I remember it was you and your boy Ryan Hallam, and y'all had the top five and stuff like that. It was already very good, entertaining content. And I think your person, you were like the, well, not about to say the first, and when you're looking back at it, the only. big personality on the network, you know what I'm saying? So that was cool to see that you know, it was going in the right direction.
Yeah,
and
man.
Then getting up to New York, you know, and dealing and getting with Scott and Adam, those were great. You know, I think that we were doing some of the best radio, probably on Sirius XM in the morning at that time. I mean, when they let us, we really had that thing rolling. So, you know, they had to step in and mess it up, but we really had that thing flowing real good. And that was a great show, and everybody would talk about it and listen to it, and it did a lot for me, Scott, and Adam's career. So you know what I'm saying? Then, you know, when it all got shut down, we went our separate ways and still kind of stuck around and hung out, and, you know, fantasy football still being like kind of the theme of you know, what we had going on.
Yeah, it's amazing. We'll write the book someday on those early days of Sirius XM and the fantasy sports radio and all that stuff. It was fun, and I look back, dude, sometimes – because I save everything. Like, I have all my old show plans. I can't even believe what I got away with. Like, yeah. I can't, because you, like you said, like, we became really popular. I mean, the station was the second biggest, or I'm sorry, third next to the two Howard shows, the biggest station on all of Sirius XM, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that was, we were the rock stars of Sirius XM for a number of years, and things have slipped away recently, you know, as but still very productive at the network and everything. But it just, when all the eyes became upon us, and then the management, the upper management, who didn't give a damn about us at first, they started focusing in, and then it's like, okay, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? All of a sudden, those personalities that you and I tried to, you know, bring out, Adam and Scott and, you know, some others too, don't get me wrong, we were sort of handcuffed. And that's when the rebellions came. And, you know, it was tough during those periods where we wanted to get creative and do more and expand and do those wild, crazy things. I remember I had a lesbian dating game on a weekend show on a fantasy. Like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
I mean, I had Osama bin Laden fantasy football, or Osama bin Laden fantasy, we drafted Navy SEALs, like, who would kill it? Like, dude, I did some wild stuff back in those days. But
we used to come in there every morning, and I'd be like, man, I'm certain we can't say this. You know what I'm saying? And I damn sure know that I can't say it. But it was like, you know, I remember so many times of saying something and being called on it, and my first response, Jeff, was it funny though?
Yeah, right.
And everybody's like, you might lose your job, but yeah, we got a couple laughs out of it.
I know. I mean, that's the truth, though. I mean, we have a job to entertain, and you know what the lines are. And, you know, every now and then you'll step over a line, you'll be like, yeah, I get it. Yeah, I stepped over. But there's 90% of the time you get called on stuff. It's not, nothing was wrong. Nobody's really offended. I remember I went after somebody. I said a joke about the state of Florida one time. And literally, like, I was fired, and then they had to save me, like, one of 18 times this has happened.
Yeah.
I was like, come on, man, it's a joke. They have Florida Man. Like, I had to show them that. I'm like, come on, dude, give me a break with that. But
yeah, no, that's too much. It's taking it too far. Everybody knows that, you know, the Florida thing is, you know, like you said, you put your birth date, you put your day of birth in Florida Man, and you'll be surprised at some of the stuff that comes up. So yeah, that's not over the top at all. You know what I mean? And when I had my thing, you know what I'm saying? Obviously, you know, it was a running joke. It created in my mind, in my sick, twisted mind about, you know, and listen, I've gotten in trouble for this.
Everything.
The way this thing unraveled was so funny, Jeff. It's like, and I'm still like catch stuff about it. But the person who is, and if they listen, I don't give a shit or not. You know what I'm saying? And it's not nobody at Sirius. Well, they are at Sirius XM, but it's not nobody in the management or nothing like that. But I used to find it funny that, you know, my boy Adam Ronis, you know, him and Lisa Ann were like, had this brother and sister relationship.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is the funniest thing in the world. Right. So, you know what I'm saying? We took advantage of that. And we said Ronis was in the friend zone and stuff like that. Right. And man, I mean, they built these big bits out of it to the point where the management was encouraging it. They liked it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then one morning, this dude comes in and was like, well, you know what? I got to go away for a draft this weekend, whatever, whatever. I know you're real friendly with ladies. I'm sending my wife with you. You can go out, you guys can go shoe shopping. You know what I mean? I know she's safe with you. I know nothing won't happen to her. And I said, if you send your wife with me, she's going to come back walking funny.
Right.
And they were like, oh, my God, we can't believe that you would make that kind of joke. That's that kind of humor. And I'm like, yo, wait a minute. Relax. You know what I'm saying? One single person, one single individual complained, but they complained to the head of Sirius XM, who is a female, and that kind of started it. That's where it kind of got rolling at, Jeff.
Yeah, and man, it's a shame. It is the world we live in, and navigating those waters is really difficult. And man, it's befallen a lot of us, and I'm surprised I'm still going, to be quite honest with some of the stuff I've said. But again, it's the spirit is what it is and all that. But going back, so like we started that 2010 there at Sirius XM. You said you were big into fantasy football even before that. How long have you been playing? When did you discover fantasy football?
I think it probably was the year I moved. I think my first year was 03. And that's when I first moved to Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. That was the year. Like the year before, I was looking into it. I think you mainly had to pay for it back then, though. I think 03 was that. 02, 03 was that first year, like that dot-com boom came to fantasy.
Yeah.
And I hopped into a league. And at the time, my girlfriend at the time, she hopped into a league at work. And I helped her draft. Listen, I'm just going off the rankings at this point.
Yeah.
But I guess the very first league I ran was the two-quarterback league. My really? Two quarterbacks on that team, yeah, this was crazy, in 2003 was unheard of two-quarterback leagues.
Jeff
my person. Quarterbacks were Steve McNair and Peyton Manning. This so happened to be the year they won the co-MVPs. I had Anquan Boldin when he had that best rookie season ever.
Yep, the Cardinals.
And I also believe I had Jamal Lewis the year he ran for 2,000 yards. That team lost in the championship.
Oh, wow. I'm stunned that team lost.
That team lost in the championship. That's how it is, though. The best team really wins a 12-team league.
Yeah, it's hard to do because, I mean, it's two seasons. It's one to get to the playoffs, mm-hmm. and that's another – it's a whole other season once you're in the playoffs because then it comes down to, you know, every start you make, every – it's a weekly basis. It's DFS, daily fantasy in the
playoffs. And you know what's crazy, Jeff?
What's that?
Especially with the way – back in those days with the waiver wire, the continuous waiver wire.
Yeah.
And the people, if you're still playing like that now, you can have the best team. If you don't never get that top waiver priority – those teams are going to start getting hot. And by the time they get to week 16, you're like, oh, my God. You yeah. know what I'm saying? And yeah. you're going to face that team in week 15, and you're going to lose in the first, you know, after your bye. Mm-hmm. That happens a lot because those teams with that good waiver priority, those teams tend to get the players in the second half of the season who ain't been beat up, and those players get hot. It's been every year just about we see somebody come and pop up out of nowhere and save fantasy seasons.
Yeah, we do. I mean, every year. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's why when we go back to Odell Beckham and all that stuff, it's like my advice to everybody in the first round and even two rounds, just don't F it up.
Yeah.
Just don't screw it up. Don't be the hero. You know I like to be the hero. You know I want to be the hero. But I'm gonna pick my spot to be the hero, and boom. You know what I mean? It's like – you know, at the bar, you're talking to, you know, a lady friend or whatever. You don't just drop your pants and be like, hey, we're doing this? You know, you gotta work your way into it a little bit. And that way, for me, it's, you know, give it a couple rounds, build a nice solid foundation of stud players. It's hard to really go wrong at the top unless you get somebody suspended or injured. And so navigate away from those waters and then make your move in the mid to late rounds. You know, that's,
speaking of that, so talking about navigating that and being the hero.
Yeah.
I was watching Daily Wager. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good show.
Well, Mike Clay.
Our boy Mike Clay was on there.
Our guy Preston Johnson, by the way, that was
that's right, yeah.
He's on there. Yeah, he's our guy. He was our betting guy forever. And then of course ESPN comes and scoops him up. So how can
it happens, you know what I'm saying? But now I see him, he does a good job on that joint.
Sure does.
So Mike Clay was on there, and I work with Mike Clay, you know what I'm saying, produce a show and stuff like that. And I get Mike's Clay thing. He's like a value-based drafter. You know what I'm saying? He looks at the hobby very analytically. And he was having a Todd Gurley conversation. I noticed he took Todd Gurley on, I believe, on that 1-2 turn, and maybe in that FSGA draft.
Yep, That's what
I'm like, I'm not touching Todd Gurley. I get where Mike is coming from because, oh, he's a value at that point. But if he's got arthritis in his knees and he's 27 years old, he's not a value.
Right. Yeah. No, it's not a value if he breaks down. Here's the thing with Gurley. I think everybody's missing on Gurley. I don't think it's the knee. The knee is whatever. To me, all these guys are going down. Like, especially at running back, you just get hit this many times. Eventually, they're all going down, Corey. Mm-hmm. So my move is this. If this was last year, last 2 years even, and, you know, this is the same Rams running game as we've seen, all I'm going to do, I'll draft Gurley in the first, and I'm just going to handcuff Henderson to him, and hell, I'll go Malcolm Brown in the, you know, the 13th round. I'll go three deep, certifying that I get the Rams running back. I just don't think the Rams are going to be able to run the ball as effectively. The reason being, they lost Roger Saffold, their left guard. They lost John Sullivan, their center, from a year ago. These are two of the top run blockers in the National Football League. Andrew Whitworth, their left tackle, that, by the way, Jeff Fisher never had. And mm-hmm. Todd Gurley, when he's a third-round pick years ago, yeah, Whitworth comes in, Gurley goes off. He's 37 years old and contemplated retirement in the offseason. I don't like that either. So, like, to me, this offense is not going to be quite what it was before. And if Gurley goes down, I think the overall – you're not going to see C.J. Anderson-type numbers by whoever that backup is, you know. So
I take the under on their team total.
Yeah. Oh yeah, dude. I did too. It's 11. I already bet it. It was 11. I pounded the under. Yeah. They got problems. No Sue. We know Marcus Peters was exposed last year. Tlaib's another year older. Jared Goff looked terrible really down the stretch, and even in the playoffs, they took a lot of the pressure off of him with CJ Anderson and that, and then losing those linemen. Nah, I'm under on the Rams for sure. McVay's a genius, but it's been a lot
of – his quarterback was exposed in the Super Bowl.
You remember Mike Martz? Wasn't he a genius?
Oh, yeah. He was a genius, too.
Yeah, he was a genius, too. Jeff Fisher at one point was a genius. Like, there, you know, there's a lot of geniuses come and go in the league. And, you know, I get it for a couple of years, but once the defense coordinators sit around and start game planning and realize what you're doing – we'll, you know, we'll see what ends up happening. But, yeah, man, so that's where I'm at. I'm not – I would have been in on Gurley, but I don't – the knee plus the losses along the offensive line, the regression there, it's just like, why? You know, mm-hmm. plus if somebody, you know, early in this process back in May were thinking, oh, I saw him go into third round, like right after some of the news came out or whatever, in a best ball draft. And I go, okay, may, you know – right now, you know, I'll start kicking the tires on that in the third round, maybe. And I handcuff because that's what I do with running backs yeah. all the time. But, you know, but no, he's going, people are the fruit is too tempting. He's going to be end of the first, beginning of the second, mid second, the latest pick. And for that, I'm out on Todd Gurley as well. It sounds like you're the same, right?
Yeah, I'm not fooling with Todd Gurley this year. It's not going to happen. I'll take some of the other backs later on. I keep getting caught with Kupp or Woods. As a wide receiver, I think I kind of want to avoid it a little bit too. I probably trust them and where they're being drafted and what they can bring back more than I do Gurley. Which one of those wide receivers you like the best?
So here's what I'm about. I'm about the relationship with the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I think people take care of their own. And we saw in this offseason, we saw Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown, great quarterback, great wide receiver, break up because they didn't get along off the field. I look at guys like Deshaun Watson and Will Fuller, and these are boys. They're yeah. going to take care of each other. Jared Goff and Cooper Kupp, they're boys. He's gonna trust Cooper Kupp over Cooks. He's going to trust him over Woods at, you know, all things being equal. So considering Kupp is the lowest cost, even though he's coming off the injury and all that, I think Kupp is the guy. But like we talked about, I think there's some regression here overall. Jared Goff, there's something about the kid I just don't – I don't believe in. I really don't. You know, I don't know if he's just, you know, dumb.
I got killed last year repeatedly. I'm talking about people were making fun of me for the whole entire football season. I came out, I believe, in week two after they had one of their big impressive games. And I was like, son is a bus driver. Jared Goff is a bus driver.
Yes.
I'm talking about I got hammered for that. Yeah. Until the Monday after the Super Bowl. And everybody was like, you know what? You're right. He is a bus driver.
Dude, we can't dispute it. He's dumb. He didn't know where the sun sets. He doesn't know what continent he's on. He didn't learn the playbook. Like, there's a lot there. Don't forget, this is a dude who has to be babysat. Sean McVay is in his ear. It's like, you know, Corey, you used to produce, you know, I'm on the air and you're producing. It's like you were having to tell me what to say every moment of the time until 15 seconds hit the time clock. And by then you're like, all right, you're going to throw this.
Yeah.
Imagine having to do that every single solitary offensive play and then him still screwing it up. Like, how do you have that, all that information, somebody literally pulling the puppet strings for you, and you still screw it up? Yeah, I think he is a pedestrian quarterback. I do. He's just in a good system that surprised a lot of people, and then they surrounded him with talent. The receivers are all good. The offensive line was fantastic up until this year. Now they lost two guys. One other thing, though, and this is my favorite part. You're looking like consensus ADP, Corey. Cooks, Woods, Kupp, all pretty much either second, third, fourth round roughly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Jared Goff, you see, go way later. How's that work?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. How does Jared Goff go all the way down? I get not liking Jared Goff. I'm on board with that. But I'm also not going to – you know, I'll take a shot at a Rams receiver. I'll take one in the fourth round, something like that. But I'm not going to load up on two or more of these guys, especially in the early rounds, thinking that Jared Goff isn't going to produce.
Because yeah, especially when you don't trust the quarterback, it definitely does not add up. So – don't know how that's going to work out. Like you said, the fourth round is a good time to go. I think Woods had the breakout year last year. He was excellent for his owner. I think Kupp coming back off the injury, it's a good shot. Like you said, that rapport, that relationship, and then Kupp had all those red zone targets too. I'm going Cooper Kupp. Yeah. I'm looking at the draft I did right now where I took Cooper Kupp in the fifth round.
Nice.
So okay. I'm satisfied with that. You like Cooper Kupp or Tyler Boyd? Both of those guys on the board.
Ooh, I probably am going to go with Cooper Kupp.
Interesting.
Listen, I like Boyd. He fits my profile. He's taller and all that. And I'm not totally against Andy Dalton and the Bengals offense either. They did lose Jonah Williams, which really sucks, especially for Mixon owners here. But I think a healthy A.J. Green is such an alpha. And you don't know how that's going to – you know, John Ross being a big play guy – do they have enough to support three wide receivers? I'm not exactly sure. So, you know.
I don't consider John Ross is a zero to me.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. I don't disagree. And I said that the day he was drafted too. But.
You know, see, I don't trust. It's like DK Metcalf. I'm never going to take one of those workout warriors, those combine superstars. You know what I'm saying? Look like Tarzan, play like Jane. This Metcalf is going to be a disaster.
Were you in San Francisco in that one convention we had when everybody was hyped on Cordero Patterson?
Oh, yeah.
Were you there? Dude, I sat in the lobby, and I was a nobody still. Yeah, and I was screaming at people. I was clowning fools. No chance. Dude can't catch a football. Catches the ball in his body. He's like a fourth grader trying to catch a football. It's like, no chance on this guy. You guys are all out of your minds. And it's the same kind of thing with Metcalf. You know, again, guys can develop and can get better. I don't dispute that, but DK Metcalf's raw right now. He's real raw.
That's not nothing that I'm interested in. There's so many other wide receivers you can get that's going to be better suited, especially in the range that he's going. I'm the same way about, like, Jeff, I believe, show me, like, you know, if put it like this, I'm high on Damian Williams this year because I like to be high on Andy Reid running backs.
Yeah, system.
Because that works.
Yep.
And everybody's talking about N'Keal Harry. And I'm like, give me the Patriot rookie wide receiver that worked.
Yeah. Who is it?
Who is it?
Yep. Just no. There's a lot of vacated targets, and I understand that. But what people have to also understand is Edelman did not do that much last year. Julian Edelman's numbers were pretty pedestrian during the regular season. He went on that amazing run in the playoffs and obviously was Super Bowl MVP, but what did Edelman have last year? 100 targets, maybe? I mean, yep. You're going to look at that, you know, 150 targets plus on this guy. Tom Brady can't throw the ball downfield. He doesn't like inexperienced wide receivers.
Exactly.
I think N'Keal Harry, if you could draft him into late rounds and take a flyer on him, I'm okay with it. But this is a long way from any kind of steady fantasy production. And outside of Randy Moss, the last, like, highly skilled. There is not. There's no other.
I mean, Andre Johnson went out there and quit. We all know what happened with Joe Sanko. Reggie Wayne didn't have no luck out there. He was like, I'm not dealing with this shit. Yep. You know what I'm saying?
Demaryius Thomas is there now.
I would not be surprised if Demaryius Thomas get cut.
Yeah, oh, I think so too. I think he will get cut. I mean, coming off the Achilles is going to be tough. All depends on how he bounces back. But yeah, it doesn't work out. And even like we're talking about Ted Schuster and I were talking about on the SiriusXM show about Josh Gordon. And like he was drafted in both FSGA drafts and everything else like that. I'm like, okay, is it really worth the risk? Because I mean, his numbers weren't that great. I mean, 60 targets. Whatever, 45 catches and 3 touchdowns. You know, it's fine, but he didn't do – Josh Gordon's a better player than that, but in this offense, everything runs through those quick-twitch slot wide receivers. Get open immediately, Brady delivers it, move the chains. Run the ball, pass the running backs, quick-twitch wide receiver, hit the chain. You know, there's not a lot of upside I see, and I think N'Keal Harry being a rookie, it's going to take a while. For folks drafting him in Dynasty, what do you think? Brady's going to play to his 50?
Yeah, come exactly. On, the Dynasty thing, I can see. I would give more clearance. You know, I would give more, okay, I get it to the Dynasty thing. But when I'm looking at drafts, but he's going ahead of, listen, Michael Gallup is probably not going to be worth nothing either, but he's going ahead of Adam Humphries. He's going ahead of my man Bob Foster. He's going ahead of Devin Funchess. It's a lot of people starting to talk about Devin Funchess now.
Nobody likes him.
Yeah, nobody. People hate Devin Funchess.
Yeah, I don't mind Devin Funchess at all. With Andrew Luck, like on a one-year show-me deal, I am okay with Devin Funchess for where he's going. I thought people would be more hype on him.
And yeah, no, it is not. You know what? He has a bad – he's like Cam Newton. He's just a dude that fantasy players just don't like. They just can't wrap their arms around it. I remember 2 years ago I got some production out of him. He came in critical for me, as a matter of fact, in an auction league. I mean, I got him for $3 off the waiver wire or something 1 week. And, you know, he performed in that wide receiver two, wide receiver three range for about a 6-7 week period during the bye weeks a couple years ago. And that was a bit helpful. But, you know, those are some of the things that I'm looking at, Jeff. This second wide receiver in Pittsburgh, James Washington or Dante Moncrief. I kind of like both players. So I'm like, man.
If you had to choose one, which one would you go?
Jeez.
They went in the same round in the FSGA draft.
Oh man, that's starting to get closer because, you know, Washington has the draft capital.
Sure.
And everybody knows what that organization has done with wide receivers, but Moncrief can play, you know, and I don't want to say that he really hasn't had a chance, but you know they got a hurt season to Andrew Luck, then he had to show the injury. A healthy Moncrief with a healthy Big Ben is probably at this point a better player than James Washington.
Yeah, kind of thinking that too. Like you said, go look at the numbers when Andrew Luck and Moncrief were on the field together in Indianapolis. The numbers are fantastic, those two together.
He's a touchdown guy.
He is. He's a touchdown maker and a big play guy too in Indianapolis. And, you know, Jacksonville, you could scrub all that clean with Blake Bortles last year. There's nothing there. But now you're getting him. One of those guys are going to break out. Because one thing we don't know, and I say this about guys like Adam Thielen all the time, you could just see it. Certain players thrive on lesser competition. And when you're a wide receiver, believe me, they bounced me in high school from quarterback to wide receiver, and I'm a slow white dude who, you know, I had decent hands, but I couldn't get separation for anything.
Yeah.
When you put me on some like 5'6" guy, though, I'll just post him. I'll post him up, and it'll be fine. That's what some wide receivers can do. They can beat the hell out of one-on-one competition against a nickel cornerback, a third or fourth corner. When you get safeties rolling over the top, you don't know. And that's what Juju's going to fight this year. He's not going to have the bracket on the other side of Antonio Brown. So now he's going to become the bracketed receiver with safety shadowing him over the top of the top corner. Can he beat that? I don't know. I think he can, but it's not a guarantee. That other spot on the field is going to be an isolation. Washington, Moncrief, Deontay, the guy they drafted. I mean, I don't know. Somebody's going to pop, though. So I'm circling that one like a buzzer, too.
Yeah, it's too much. We've seen too much of that wide receiver in Pittsburgh. One of those Pittsburgh wide receivers, we go back, like you said, all the way back to Mike Wallace and just count Emmanuel Sanders, Antonio Brown. Now you got Juju. And these guys have been excellent. They've been getting it done. And, you know, that system, obviously, Todd Haley leaves that behind. So, you know, they put people in the Hall of Fame. So, one of these dudes is going to have opportunity to. I guess off the experience, I'm gonna give it to Moncrief, but I have shares of Washington also.
Yeah, I think I'd probably lean Moncrief as we sit right now in early July. And, you know, that's what training camp's for, and we'll see who progresses and who misses time and all that kind of stuff. But somebody's going to pop in Pittsburgh, that is for sure. Now, I got to talk about, one, I don't know if I've ever asked you this question directly or not, but how did you become a Cowboy fan? Like, you were born in New York, right?
Yeah, born in New York City.
Moved down to D.C. for a while.
So I did 10 years in D.C.
How the hell did you become a Cowboy fan? What happened there?
My father, when he was in school, amazingly, I haven't seen any photos to prove this, but he ran track. Uh-huh. And, you know, when you ran track back in that day, you know, the person you wanted to emulate was the Bullet, Bob Hayes. So when Bob Hayes got to the NFL, my father, you know, was like, I'm going to root for Bob Hayes' team. And I believe at that time, maybe the furthest southern team was the D.C. football team. So he started rooting for Bob Hayes, and the Dallas Cowboys became his team. And it just kind of passed down. You know, I tell people all the time, my earliest childhood memory is Dwight Clark catching that pass in the back of the end zone.
Yeah.
And I cried like a bit. I remember that like it was yesterday. And doing the math on it, I couldn't have been no more than 4 years old. So I just picked it up from there, and then – watching Tony Dorsett run for 99 yards on Monday Night Football. Yeah, it was just like, yeah, this is it. This is it. This is it. This is all my thing right here.
That's your team. And then obviously through the 90s, it was glory days there for sure.
It was while I was in high school. Yes, it was.
Yeah, man, I could believe it. And I'll say this. I'll be the one that says it because you'll be a homer. I said it on SiriusXM a couple weeks back, and I think the Cowboys have a Super Bowl caliber team.
I think it is.
And people aren't recognizing.
I would be disappointed in anything less than an appearance in the NFC Championship game, number one. But the defense has come together. The offensive line should be healthy again this year. You need Ezekiel Elliott. You need Roger Goodell not to F with Ezekiel Elliott.
Oh, I know, right? Yeah.
Over that foolishness, and don't worry about that. But this, I don't know if I trust Prescott yet. You don't know, Jeff. I discuss a wide range of things when I talk fantasy football. But you know, I have a nickname for Dak Prescott.
Let me try to remember. No, I don't know. What is it?
All Lives Matter. So
why is Dak All Lives Matter?
You remember last year when he got to training camp and they asked him about protesting the national anthem? Like, I never protest. I don't see why guys would do that here. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, okay. So I started calling him All Lives Matter Prescott. And listen, when Amari Cooper got there, All Lives Matter did play better. But I don't get me wrong. He's got playoff wins. He's won two divisions. He's got a rookie of the year. You know, he's probably going to get a big contract. The jury's still out on Prescott for me.
Here's what I'm about. I don't think that Dak Prescott is a game changer. I don't think he is a, he's not the quarterback that's just going to catapult you to an NFC championship or a Super Bowl. But it's the collection of parts. You put – what people don't realize about the game of football is why I buy into systems with running backs and stuff. When you get great – offenses and great scripts, meaning the playbook, and you start getting that, and Kellen Moore's going to expand it. People are so used to playing the Cowboys one-dimensional, and now Kellen Moore's going to come in, spread things out a little bit, and you have the best offensive line in football. And I'm not talking about just the starting five. If Travis Frederick comes back, holy Lord, they draft Connor McGovern, who had a first-round grade in the third round. You already had Connor Williams, who was should have been a first rounder, was taken in the second round. They keep replenishing these guys. Cam Fleming was a first rounder several years ago back in the day. You have depth on the offensive line. You got five all-pro guys and Collins, Martin, Frederick, Connor Williams, and Tyron Smith providing his back stays up. You got depth in there. Now all of a sudden Jason Witten comes back. A little more help on the offensive line and just a reliable chain mover who knows the offense. He's not a world beater anymore, but it stabilizes the position. Then you got Amari Cooper, which we saw the offense just expand on. You got that go-to downfield threat. Michael Gallup and Dak Prescott must have had seven 40-yard touchdowns that they left in the tank.
I watch every snap, every Dallas Cowboy game, and I'm like, and that's why I'm saying all lives matter. Please, the man is wide open. What are you doing, son?
They just couldn't connect for whatever reason, and that's going to change here. You know they're connected on some of that. And now you get Randall Cobb, who everyone's down on, but I'm telling you, Randall Cobb is a smooth wide receiver, great playing on the interior, reliable hands, can run after the catch as well. He's going to be another outstanding. You talk about Cole freaking Beasley, you're all worried about. Randall Cobb makes Cole Beasley look like Benny Hill or something, man. It's not even close. They have upgraded. This entire offense is world class. This is Super Bowl offense.
No, they like I said, outside of Prescott, you got to like it a lot. The thing with Cobb is he's a quarterback-friendly wide receiver. Yes. You know what I'm saying? And that's a lot of what you see them putting around Prescott. You know, Tony Romo is – you go to the Packer game, fourth and two. You know what I'm saying? We're going to go out there. I'm going to throw a 40-yard pass to Dez Bryant to win the game. That's Tony Romo's game.
Right.
Dak Prescott on fourth and two – I'm going to stick my nose in the pile, get the fourth down, and we're going to drive down the football field and win this game. Yep. So Dez Bryant is more go up, get the football. That's Romo throwing him the high ball, go up there and get it. See, Dak Prescott doesn't want to turn the football over. So he wants his wide receivers to be nice and wide open. And that's why you see an excellent route runner like Michael Gallup, a route runner like Amari Cooper, a guy like a Randall Cobb. They bring Jason Witten back. You know, Prescott likes to have those reliable route runners around him so he doesn't have to worry about throwing interceptions.
Yeah, I absolutely. He's more of the game manager type, no doubt about it. But, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. He can do it with his legs. He, you know, see some deep balls out of him, but not, you know, not that aggressive. Is a game manager. But with all these pieces around him, then you look at the defense. Vander Esch's emergence now pumps Sean Lee to the other side. Jalen Smith is finally gearing up, you know, years after DeMarcus Lawrence. They re-signed, got him a big contract here, bringing in Robert Quinn. Like, dude.
Don't forget Jones in the secondary how he played last season and how he was able to finally show them some consistency at secondary play. So that was a good look for them also this, you know, too. I think they're better than the Eagles. I'm biased. I think they're better than the Eagles.
Oh, I know. You're biased, but yeah. I'm here. I grew up anti-Cowboy, don't forget. So I'm anti-Cowboy as just a natural position. But I'm in. I'm all in Cowboys this year because
they played well against the Saints. You know, the Rams and the Packers have been a pain these past couple seasons. But right quick on Vander Esch, you know, I was pretty upset last year when they passed on Calvin Ridley to draft Vander Esch.
Yep.
And looking back at it, I'm like, oh, you know what? They did the right thing. I love Ridley, don't get me wrong, but Vander Esch is better for what Dallas is trying to do.
And Sean Lee can't stay healthy. I mean, if Sean Lee was always healthy, it would be a whole different – then it would have been a whole different conversation. I don't think they would have taken the chance 2 years early on Jalen Smith either if Sean Lee could stay healthy. But that's a serious problem with him. But, I mean, you look at even – like I'm looking at the roster now, and George Ioka, who is a all-pro safety in Cincinnati, had a sort of an off year with Minnesota last year because he was cut at the deadline because of cap. But that's a starting free safety right there for you. All pro at that. This team is the depth on the Cowboys, which in the National Football League this 2019, you're going to need these backups. You got to see, all right, this guy goes down. What do you have? Pretty loaded everywhere you look. So that's what it really intrigues me here about Dallas. And the Giants aren't going to do it, we know. The Eagles get a lot of love because they did win that Super Bowl, but the bloom is off that rose, in my opinion. At least a little bit. So, and the Redskins aren't going anywhere either. Although I think the Redskins defense is better than people give credit for this year.
I think they're close to being a good team. I really do.
They need that quarterback. Maybe Haskins is the guy. Who knows? But so with that being said, circle all the way back to where we started this discussion, the beginning of the first round. And you talked about Kamara versus Saquon and that. My question is, why isn't Zeke getting any love? Why is he fourth in both of these drafts? I think there's a big four with Saquon, Kamara, Zeke Elliott, and Christian McCaffrey. I think that's fair, and I'm fine with any one of them if you really made a stand. But to me, Zeke is pushing the number one for me overall, much closer than Kamara or CMC.
I think I would, you know, that's I think people look at Zeke. Listen, Ezekiel Elliott has been the best running back in the NFL since he's got there. And the yardage says that. You know, when he got suspended for no reason a couple years ago, he was leading the NFL in rushing.
Yeah.
His first season, he led the NFL in rushing. Last year, he led the NFL in rushing. He's probably going to lead the NFL in rushing this year. I mean, some of that stuff might go down, but you're right. But now with the ability to catch the football out the backfield, I think he had 70 receptions last year.
So, Corey, this is a true story. So I was doing that, the FSGA draft, and commented. I'm not kidding you, and I'm not going to say who it was or anything like that. But somebody goes, well, yeah, I just don't. And I asked the question between the four. And they're like, well, you know, Zeke just doesn't catch the ball. And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, he had 77 grabs last year. Like,
yeah.
I think 100 targets and 77 grabs. What are you talking about? Well, I don't even know. And I just let it go. I'm like, okay, he doesn't catch the ball. 77 grabs last year.
And that's the thing. And the perception is he's just a running back. But no, he has become much more. It's just that see, I think the Dallas is so methodical. They put together these big, you know, 25 play, 9-minute drives. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Where guys like Barkley and Kamara and CMC, they're taking it to the crib. You know what I'm saying? 70, you know, 50, 60 yard receptions, while Zeke and Dallas are just grinding you down and grinding you down and grinding you down. And I think the perception is Zeke doesn't have that explosiveness that these other backs have.
Oh, man. Well, you give me, you know, a run-based offense, a run-first offense, which will still be here in Dallas, and you give me that offensive line, I don't care who you have. You could have Refrigerator Perry in the backfield, and I'd be a buyer, man. It's just too good of a setup for anybody, especially somebody of Zeke's caliber at running back. This dude could break records here in 2019, especially then, you know, if they get those leads, if they do make big plays, and they get out to a lead, and then those pass rushers like Quinn and DeMarcus Lawrence start sacking the quarterback, creating turnovers, you're going to see crazy video game-type numbers out of Ezekiel Elliott in the second half of ball games this year. So it's an exciting time for sure to be a Cowboy fan. And for me, Corey, so my top four, Saquon still, I'll give it to him right now. It's close. But Zeke's number two, Kamara number three, CMC number four. How do you see it at the top?
I'm going Barkley, Kamara, Zeke, and then CMC. That list is interchangeable.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's interchangeable. It's a fluid situation depending on how things work out. Obviously, I want to see what's going on in Giant Camp. I think I saw some highlights of some OTAs and some workouts. Eli Manning was throwing floaters. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, oh, this could get ugly. You know what I'm saying? So – it's going to be – I just want to make sure that Eli is going to make it through this season, you know what I'm saying, before I can, you know, commit all the way to Barkley like I think I would. I had some shares last year work well. If Eli's there, like you said, it brings competence and it brings Barkley a ton of receptions because that's the only guy he can throw the football to. And, this man, you know how tough that's got to be on Barkley? How many times he's going to touch the football this year?
Yes. It's got to be, yeah. It's got the pressure's on, and the offense is going to run through him without any question. It's going to be 400. I mean, you know, I mean, 400 is a legitimate chance. And, you know, I think, though, if he touches it less, it could just mean that he's producing it more. I don't think their percentage is going to go away anytime soon. But what we need Eli for, as we mentioned at the top, we got to get those safeties off of Saquon. We got to get them, keep them back. Keep them going. Golden Tate, Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram. Hopefully that is enough for the Giants over there. All right, man. So we
right quick, Jeff, before we get out of here, on the other side of town, yeah. Le'Veon Bell. What do you think of Le'Veon Bell this year?
You love setting me up. I'm out. I'm 1,000% out.
Wow. 1,000%
out. I have him in the rankings over at fantasyguru.com as the 16th running back.
Wow.
I am so out on Le'Veon Bell. Like, here's my thing, Corey, and, you know, man, you and I grew up, we're hustlers. We see things where I look at your eyes, I know what you're about. You know what I mean? And I see Le'Veon Bell. I don't see a guy who's interested in football. Like, football's like, I want my check. Football's not that interesting.
Being a football player and being a professional athlete.
Absolutely, and he's a professional athlete, no doubt about that. And, you know, will he produce amazing numbers for four games? Very possible. But I'm telling you, you give me an over-under of eight games for Le'Veon Bell, he's going under that number. He's not playing. This guy ain't interested. He ain't going to play football. The dude hasn't touched a ball since Christmas 2017.
That's true.
He hasn't got hit. Dude, it's like I played football. I played ball my whole life. Used to play tackle on the concrete, all this stuff. You get me out, even at 25 years old. I'll never forget. Me and Schuster go down to the park. 25 years old, I'm like, oh, I'm going to tear these suckers up. I got popped one time, and I nearly had diarrhea, tears, like every bodily fluid that came out of my body. I'm like, oh, I just can't do this.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not Le'Veon Bell. I get it.
Yeah.
I just don't believe in it. I don't trust it. So, yeah, I'm completely out. I don't think Adam Gase is into him. I think that's what got the GM run out of there too. So, I think they're so – and Adam Gase is a nut job. I don't like it, any of it. Like, you want to talk about the Giants dysfunction. I think people are just – you know, people are giving the Jets a pass because they spent a lot of money. Kudos to them, but I don't
the
like
Jets it. The look like they had it figured out until they brought Adam Gase in there. And I'm like, why would they do that? And then what gives Adam Gase the right to call shots? He hasn't won shit.
None.
Yes, nothing. Exactly. He hasn't won
Field
nothing.
In the division.
Yeah, exactly. I don't get the Gase hire.
He's in the room. He had a chance. He could do anything he wanted. Like he could have beat the Patriots. And they did last year. Miami had that miracle run by the I'm blanking on the running back, but you know that miracle, you know, five pitch thing. Yeah, Kenyon Drake took it to the house and beat the Patriots once. BFD, like, this is a guy lost within the division, and you bring him. He's the guy it's beyond comprehension to me. And you could tell by his crazy eyes and everything else. Like the dude's, he's a tweaker in my opinion too. Like there's so much wrong with the Jets. It's going to be fascinating. Yeah.
I don't think New York is going to take too kindly to Adam Gase. I see, put it like this. In a regular scenario, I like the workload that I think Le'Veon Bell can get. That's what I like, the volume that he can get. Sometimes volume trumps efficiency.
Sure. I'll take volume all day.
Yeah. I think that could be the case in Bell. The problem is Adam Gase don't like star players.
Nope.
And that's going to be the death of Le'Veon Bell in the Jet jersey.
I mean, and I think that, well, all the stories are that. That's exact. He didn't want Bell because he wants to go committee. He wanted committee in Denver. He did committee in Chicago when he ran that office. He did committee in Miami. He doesn't want a star running back, but the Jets brought it in just to bring him in. So they got pissed, and he won the pissing contest with the GM. And now he's left with Le'Veon Bell and it's like, okay, fine. But Le'Veon Bell's going to be like, oh, man, bro, my hamstring.
See, I think Le'Veon Bell's going to dig in. I think Le'Veon Bell's like, because Le'Veon Bell got the big check in the locker room. You see what I'm saying? So I think Bell's going to dig in. See, Gase is going to come ready to fight. And I think Le'Veon Bell is going to be like, okay, well, let's see who the big dog on this team is.
Le'Veon Bell's going to drop a single on opening day. Like, that's he's born. He wants to be a rep. Sorry. Like, dude, this guy thinks he's next or something. Like, I don't know, man. I don't see it. I just don't think. And again, maybe I'm wrong with Le'Veon Bell. I do like volume over talent any day of the week for me. But I just don't think it'll be there because I think he's gonna the moment his groin or hamstring or rib cage something's tweaked. He's got the money. He's out. There's no interest in anymore. He cost himself so much money by not playing. You only do that if you're not interested in playing. It doesn't really equal out. And I've called guys out like this before. And I can't even think of one scenario of which I've been wrong yet. So maybe this will be the first, but
yep.
I'm certainly not touching it from a Le'Veon Bell standpoint. All right, man, that's the voice of Corey Parson. I am Jeff Vance. Follow Corey Parson on Twitter at Fantasy Exec. I didn't even do my impression today.
No, well, we've got plenty of time.
It's going to be a long season. At the Fantasy Exec, EXEC. On Twitter, make sure you're following Corey Parson. He's going to be doing a lot of podcasts behind the paywall, in front of the paywall for us over at fantasyguru.com. Remember, draft guide available, fantasyguru.com. Talk about 700 players ranked, PPR, non-PPR, overall, IDP. You know, we got the college guys, Russell Clay and Armando Marsal and Tyler Beeker doing the Lord's work over there. And best of all, we have a draft room. You guys could pop in anytime, day, night, weekend, weekday, whatever, ask your questions. And if you're in the middle of a draft, you can have live advice, like taking us to your draft with you. So go there, check it out over at fantasyguru.com. If you want a little bit of a discount, if you went to elitefantasy.com/radio, you get yourself 25% off the full season over at FG and all that. You can follow me at Jeff_Manns, M-A-N-S, on Twitter there as well. Corey, any final thoughts before we send them off?
Get ready for a fun season, so let's get ready to rock and roll. We'll be back, and we're going to get it done.
I'm so pumped up. It's going to be a great year, everybody. Remember, tell a friend, hit that subscribe button, download us from iTunes and Podbean, all those different areas as well. Leave your feedback, even if you hate us. Say, man, that man doesn't know what the hell he's doing. He's out of time. Corey Parson, Two Cowboy Avery, whatever you want to say, we are in it for all feedback, ladies and gentlemen. For Corey Parson, this is Jeff Manns, Fantasy Football Elite. Deuces, everybody.